This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. In particular, this month is being sponsored by Lindsay Marie Tribette and Nick Martin. I thank you both so very much. And if you want to become a patron, you can do so at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this movie edition. Well, movie fringe TV show type of edition of Where Did the Road Go? We haven't done one of these in a while, and I've been wanting to do one, and I'm here with Ren Collier.
Hey, everyone.
And Adam Sane of Conspiranormal.
Whoop-de-doo, what's up?
So, I have such a long list of movies I've been wanting to talk about, but I'm going to grab... Actually, let's start with the one that we were all just talking about right before we started recording, The Endless.
Yeah.
And without giving too much away, because it's hard to not give too much away.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of is. Well, it was a movie where you're trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And I can't say honestly that like the end that I was at the end, I was like, did I really understand what was happening there?
Yeah. And it's connected to, what's the first movie? Resolution. I think the first one's Resolution. And the two guys from Resolution are in The Endless.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, so that's probably why.
Oh no, it wouldn't make any more sense.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, the Endless sort of explains what was going on in the first movie, but you don't actually need to watch the first movie, because I didn't watch Resolution. You don't actually need to like see it to understand the Endless. The Endless is kind of its own self-contained story. There's just it takes place like in the same place, but it's looking from different points of view.
Right. So the Resolution is focused. Resolution came out in 2012, and it's focused in on just those two characters.
Mm-hmm.
Talk
about the brothers.
The junkie in the cabin.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's Resolution, which I highly recommend too. That was a really good movie. But The Endless, which was 2017, they're in it briefly, but this is kind of like a wider scope of what's going on in the area of where they're trapped.
Okay.
And it says, the description is, as kids, they escaped a UFO death cult. Now two adult brothers seek answers after an old videotape surfaces and brings them back to where they began. And basically, they start realizing that they weren't in a death cult, but when they go back, it's much, much weirder.
Yeah, it's got a lot of build up. Like, it's got this whole sense of unease from the very beginning that only builds until you actually like figure out what is going on, and it's revealed like what is actually going on in this place. And it kind of keeps you in the dark along with the characters. It's anti-Hitchcockian in the sense that like you really don't know what's going on any more so than your two sort of main characters in the movie until they sort of is revealed to them like what's happening. You get little hints as you're going along. So when you like kind of when the big reveal, the big twist happens, you kind of think back. It's like, oh, okay, now all of a sudden things make sense. But there's just like such good scenes in it. Like I keep thinking about the scene at the lake when he like goes after the toolbox in the water and he sees something under the water. Like, because that's never really re-explored, like, what he saw in the water.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's, I definitely highly recommend it, but it's definitely a brain twister.
Yeah.
I think it had some really kind of, like, Lovecraftian overtones to it as well.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
So did Resolution. So hopefully they'll do another one.
Yeah, okay. So if you want to watch a sort of artsy... art house cosmic horror movie, The Endless is a good bet. Like you'll enjoy it.
So I wanna mention this podcast, and it's called Giannis Rising. And it's from some of the people who did Wolf 359, which I know you like, Ren. Did you finish it?
Yes, I did. I love the ending. It was incredible. That whole show was just totally a ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And Giannis Rising, I think it was meant to be a limited thing, but I get the impression they're going to do something from a different angle. But what is so it's brilliant about it, but I hate the way they put it up on iTunes. So it's up as it's these two people going to another planet to investigate this lost civilization there. And you're getting the sort of like log entries, but you're getting them out of order. And they do a really good job of twisting around what you think is happening compared to what is actually happening. Unfortunately, the way they put it on iTunes, there's no episode numbers. So it's like, you know, log 6, log 3, log 1. And my player would just sort them as log 1, log 2, log 3. And that's not the order you should listen to them in. But it has a very interesting idea of alien life. And the storytelling is just fantastic. And it's Janus.
Oh, like the two-faced god.
Right.
From Greek mythology. Yeah, okay.
So you definitely get a different view of it. By the time you get done, you're just kind of like, oh, you're clever. Okay. You know? So I highly recommend it. It's also just very well done, just like Wolf 359 was. I mean, the production and everything is fantastic.
Yeah, I like that whole telling the story out of order, sort of like it's almost like a subgenre of like found media.
Yeah, you know? Like found footage type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite animated shorts does something similar where it's sort of playbacks of memories. It's sort of like a sci-fi far future kind of thing.
But what is that?
It's the short sort of art house Blame. It's just called Blame with like an exclamation mark at the end. It's not the movie that's on Netflix. It was released just a few short episodes. It's like an art house kind of thing that was released in the like kind of like early 2000s. But it's done in a similar fashion where each sort of mini episode has sort of a framing device of it being like corrupted, recovered memory. So there are all these sort of weird elements that are in all of the different shorts. And it's sort of implying that the reason these elements keep reappearing is because the memory has been corrupted in a certain way. But I love that as a framing narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, you have anything movie wise?
I've watched a lot of documentaries lately that really don't have a lot to do with like the kind of paranormal stuff, unfortunately.
Have you either?
Actually, I do. I have a movie. Oh, okay. You. Have you guys seen Mandy?
Yes.
I haven't yet, and I really want to.
It is so good.
I've been meaning to see it because I heard when it came out that it was like incredible.
It is bizarre.
Yeah, that's Nicolas Cage, who a lot of people for some reason don't like, but I do most of the time.
Yeah. I think they played up the kind of the cheesy factor with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
But that director is actually the son of the guy who made like cheesy like 80s action movies like Cobra.
Hmm.
And but he apparently had another film that he did that was, I don't remember the name of it, that I have not seen, but it's even more just bizarre. But it's very just like, it's very stylish. It's like his wife or his, it's like his wife or girlfriend gets kidnapped by these, like by this like cult, and they kill her. And like,
and
this
then,
really,
and then halfway into the movie, the initial credits roll.
and then they got this like super kind of LSD where they're constantly like tripping on acid, and he takes it and just, you know, it just becomes this this revenge kill movie. I mean, it is just, I mean, it's strange, but it's so beautifully shot.
Yeah,
and just, I mean, like, it's, story, I mean, it's it's so colorful too, just to work. It's really just visually stunning.
Story-wise, it's pretty straightforward, but it's not because of the imagery and everything else going on.
Right.
Also, at one point when he's planning his revenge, he makes a scythe. You remember that big scythe he has?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Celtic Frost logo.
Is it?
Yes. I looked at it and I went, that looks really familiar. And then I'm looking through the IMDb and it's like, oh, the scythe is the Celtic Frost logo. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
Well, you know, he's fighting like these weird biker dudes. And,
yeah. It's a very metal movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It is for sure.
Because they're almost like demons.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like, I think it's a takeoff of Hellraiser.
A little bit. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah, Mandy is definitely something people should watch, but don't expect to like fully understand it, because it's not a movie you're going to fully understand. Kind of like The Endless.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I tried to watch it with my stepson when he was here, and he couldn't take it. He's just like, just have fun with this one, man. I can't handle this.
I watched something a listener had suggested. I mentioned at some point that I had watched Summer of 84. Summer of 84 is excellent. It has almost a Stranger Things vibe, but it's not paranormal. It's about a serial killer. And it's really, really dark, especially the end. And they told me to check out The Clove Hitch Killer. So I checked out The Clove Hitch Killer, also about a serial killer, also really, really good, and not quite as dark as Summer of 84. But both of them are excellent. I think The Clove Hitch goes a little slower than Summer of 84. But I was really, they're both excellent and both kind of serial killer type stuff. Anyone seen either?
I have not seen Summer of 84.
I've seen The Clove Hitch? But I spoiled Summer of 84 for myself, but I haven't watched it now.
How'd you spoil it for yourself?
Spoiled it for yourself.
I got too curious and ended up reading what happens in it. It does sound really horrifying, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone else who hasn't seen it. But
Now maybe more on the cheesy side. I lost an hour and a half of my life, and I watched The Nun. I don't know
how was it.
It's just kind of your typical, you shock them, it's kind of scary. Honestly, I felt like they were trying to convert me to Catholicism.
Right.
That's how I felt the whole movie. This is just like a Catholicism recruiting film. that's all this is. Like, I really liked The Conjuring, the first one. Because I felt that it did a good job of bringing a lot of like how the haunted houses and the violent hauntings will kind of ramp up over time. It did a good job portraying that. The last 10 minutes were pretty ridiculous. And The Conjuring 2 is hard to get past the fact that the Warrens had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And nothing to do with that, with the Enfield case. Yeah, but some of this other stuff that has come out, like with the Annabelle, they've just come up with this whole, like, everything around the Warrens is now, like, cashed in.
Yeah. I haven't really watched a lot of, like, new horror movies. I think the most recent new horror movie I saw was Hereditary. I finally ended up seeing
Hereditary. Hereditary was very good. Hereditary that was an excellent movie. Although I really had to think about guys like you, Ren, that are some of my friends that are seriously into the occult, what they actually thought about that movie, because again, it's a good film, but it definitely plays on the whole like occult is bad sensibility.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it does. I think when I was watching it, I really enjoyed it. Cause it was well done. It was kind of creepy. I did have the hot take afterwards that I was like, this is kind of like a worse Rosemary's Baby. Because I was like, because I almost wish that there's a point in Hereditary where it kind of plays with the idea that like maybe the wife is just doing all of this because of her trauma, and like this is all in her head,
right?
But then, like, instead of running with that, they immediately like throw that out, and it's like, oh no, it actually is all supernatural. And like, I kind of wish they'd left it a little more ambiguous, like whether like what was going on was actually supernatural or if it was just, you know, her going crazy and like murdering people and like doing all of this stuff herself because of her grief. But I remember
don't give away too much.
It doesn't give away. I mean,
yeah,
I guess it just in the sense that like I wish it had been, I guess. Because it immediately throws away that idea. That's the thing. I'd be spoiling it if I was like, you know, oh, it makes you think it's all in her head. But it literally runs with that line for like 5 minutes of the
movie. Yeah. Well, I know.
It just immediately throws it out.
You have to wonder with some of these films whether, because a lot of these films are done to test audiences.
Yeah.
Do they change endings?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
do they say like, well, you know, the audience really didn't respond to that?
Yeah, they do. Focus testing is a thing that happens nowadays.
Well, what really kind of bugs me about the way that films are portrayed, especially in trailers, mm-hmm. is like Hereditary, for instance, was portrayed as like, this is the scariest movie you're ever going to see. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It was really a very well done film, mm-hmm. but it was not that frightening to me.
It was a little, there were parts of it that were real, very rough, you know, like you did, like just brutal, you know.
Yeah, well, seeing like a hand rolling down the road, that was pretty bad. But like, you know, when Mother came out, mm-hmm. that was portrayed as like a horror film in the previews. That was not a horror film.
No, absolutely not. It wasn't a good film either, but it wasn't a horror movie.
I thought it was an excellent film.
I'm in between you.
I thought it was God, what is his name?
Aronofsky.
Yeah, I thought it was Aronofsky. What's the nice way I can say pleasuring himself all over the film screen with like the most basic like biblical like analogies and stuff. Yeah, you know, stuff. It was like, I actually really liked the first part of Mother before the stuff goes really crazy. The first part of Mother is actually really good. Like, there are some amazing like performances, not out of Jennifer Lawrence, but out of like some of the other actors that are in it. It's like they really do a really good job. And it's like when it's just like a family drama, you know, when it's just about like, you know, weird Javier Bardem being like kind of a cult leader and like, you know, Ed Harris, like, is it Ed Harris in that?
Yeah, Ed Harris.
Yeah, because I love Ed Harris. He's like one of my favorite actors. And he just like shows up and he's just super kind of weird and unsettling. Like, that part is great. But when it goes off the rails, it's like, oh, it was a Bible thing. You're like, oh.
Well, I mean, it's the Bible, but also with a lot of Kabbalah mixed in.
Yeah, but it's.
Which he put into Noah, too.
Yeah.
No,
it's sort of like it felt like it was trying to be way more clever. I've got the sense that he thought he was way more clever than he really is.
Yeah, I could see that. To me, though, I've had dreams that felt like watching that movie.
Oh no, like from like a technical standpoint, the movie's amazing. Like it really is like a harrowing, like surreal, weird spectacle. I think it was just like. The metaphors and like what he was trying to say with it.
It was pretty on the surface.
Yeah,
but I think that was on purpose. You know, it was all just allegory.
It felt like a student film, right? Huh. But like a really expensive student film, like the most high budget, like you know, freshman year film school movie ever made.
I felt like there was that level of the allegory going on, but you also had this whole other level where it's like the artist, no matter what woman he has, well, that woman will never understand him, so he just keeps getting another one. You know, there was that going on too.
And it's obvious that it's like himself. Like he's sort of putting himself as like this, like, you know, godly character. And that's another thing. Like Aronofsky's notoriously egotistical, so it was sort of like, ugh. Like, I know what you're trying to do here, dude. I like the fountain, but this is
the fountain was really good.
Yeah, the fountain is excellent. And Black Swan.
Oh yeah.
Anything about Hereditary too? Because you were talking about I never answered your question about, like, from an occultist standpoint. Yeah. I do remember watching it and, like, doing all the, you know, all the Paimon stuff, and me being sort of like, that's not what Paimon's like. I know Paimon. He's not like that at all. They're just sort of like, you know, I think they just picked the name.
They gave Paimon a bad name.
They really did.
You gave him a bad deal in that one.
On the other hand, I was thinking, well, they're obviously at least passingly familiar with the Goetia. So what if they actually made a deal with Paimon to get his sigil and name out there? Because, you know, if he's the only goetic demon that I think any, like, you know, average teenager on YouTube would know. So I'm like, you know, if they didn't cut a deal with Paimon, then they really missed out here, because they really got his name out there. I hope they're getting something good in return. But yeah, I remember after watching it, I watched it with my dad and his wife, and, like, I remember she got really scared by it. And afterwards, like, I showed her my table of practice that has, like, you know, Paimon's name on it, because I use the four spirit kings on my table rather than the archangels. And she was just like, oh, no. She got, like, really scared. She didn't want to look at it.
Was your dad just like, son, is this what you do?
Nah, he doesn't care. He's just like, whatever.
I know I'm late to the party on this one, but I did finally watch Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, well, hang on one second, though. Hereditary is being followed up by Midsommar.
Oh, so there's a sequel.
It's not a sequel. It's his next movie. But it looks weird as hell.
Hmm.
It's called a Scandinavian folk horror movie.
Huh.
But if anyone wants to look it up, it's Midsommar.
A couple travel to Sweden to visit their friend's rural hometown.
Yeah, the trailer is bizarre.
Oh, it's like a pagan cult thing, so it's kind of like The Bees, that movie. The Wicker Man.
Yeah, well, that's what they compared it to.
Not the Bees.
Everybody remembers that movie, but not the original good Wicker Man.
But I don't actually remember the second one. I just remember it was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
The original good one doesn't have a scene where Nicolas Cage gets a cage put on top of his head that they pour bees into.
Yeah.
Or where he screams, how to get burned? How to get burned?
I remember seeing, like, a YouTube, like, supercut of just every scene in which he, like, punches someone in that movie. Yeah. And it's him just, like, knocking out people.
And the first one, too, is a musical.
Yeah.
It is. I don't think I've ever even seen the original Wicker Man.
Yeah, oh, you got to see the original.
Yeah, it's a musical. I haven't seen it in a long time, but yeah. It's a decent movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a classic. And yeah, Haunting of Hill House, I watched much later than everyone else. What did you think, Adam?
I loved it.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, I thought it was I thought it was a really well done show, and it pulled out a lot of these same kind of motifs that we talk about on the show. Sleep paralysis, time being a factor. Mm-hmm. I think you know what episode I'm talking about on that one.
Yep.
You know, different things like psychometry. You could tell, like, that the people definitely did some research. The connection between twins.
Yeah, yeah.
This kind of stuff. Yeah.
You watched it, like, Ren?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
Because I typically, when I see, like, ghost stuff, my, like, eyes just glaze over and I don't care. But, like,
this is not typical ghost stuff.
Yeah, I just hearing you guys talk about it, it's getting me interested in it. I just remembered that it's, like, Shirley Jackson, so it's going to be good. So
yeah, it's very much a horror drama.
I think the last ghost related thing I watched, and this is what turned me off from it, was the first American Horror Story. I started trying to watch it.
Oh.
And I was just like, I think I called it Horny Ghost Mansion. And I was just like, it's just just a TV show about this guy getting horny for ghosts. I'm just not really into this.
That maid was pretty hot, man. You gotta.
She is, and I was just like, you know, this isn't scary. This is just like a weird fantasy thing. It's like the scene in Ghostbusters where Dan Aykroyd has sex with a ghost, just like taken to its logical end.
But one of the biggest issues I have with that series is the fact that ghosts can't leave the property line.
Oh. Huh.
And it's like, seriously, you think ghosts in the afterlife are going to obey property lines? Like, that's what you're going with?
I did see a couple, like, just clips from, I think, the New Orleans one, and it looked cool. I might watch it, but...
Some of them are okay, some of them are... But none of them are great, that's the thing. Like, I've never loved one. Some people think they're fantastic, and that's fine. They've just never quite clicked with me.
I keep meaning to watch Channel Zero, and I haven't had a chance to yet, but I've heard really, really, really good things from Channel Zero.
Yeah, the first... There's only 4 seasons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done. They canceled it. But they're creepypasta stories turned into series.
Yeah, and I've seen some, like, images and stuff from it. It's really striking, like, just the cinematography, and it looks great.
Oh, yeah. No, and they're good stories. They're all good stories. I didn't like the cannibal one so much.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, it was still well done. It's just I don't like cannibal stuff that much. Maybe there's 5. Maybe there's 5 seasons, but they're all like 6 episode seasons.
Well, Soraya, since I originally watched this first season of this show because you talked about it on Where Did the Road Go, have you watched the second season of the OA?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Adam?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. Because my stepson was watching it,
mm-hmm.
and
did you watch the first season?
Yeah, I was part of the first season. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You dig it because I completely ignored it until I heard Soraya talking about how it had to do with like not out of body experiences, but like near death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I started watching it, and I kind of like the second season. I don't know. I kind of wish there wasn't a second season. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was really good, and I really enjoyed it, but I kind of loved the ending of the original series, like the original season.
Sure.
And like the sort of ambiguity about whether or not anything that she had, like, actually had happened. And then the second season is just like, oh, no, it is actually, there are actually parallel universes and everything. It's, you know, very quickly moves into this territory where it's like everything she experiences is real. So
we have learned that Rin likes ambiguity.
I do. It's just
so do I.
I do too.
You know, it's fun to make up your own mind about stuff. Sometimes I don't like it when things are spelled out for me. You know, I like because that's the fun thing about the first season of the OA is kind of you never really know. Are these stories that she's telling everyone, and you know these weird dance movements that she says will open a, you know, portal to a parallel universe? If this is just all in her head, and she's just and it strongly implies it is at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was cool. But then the second season is kind of goes in a completely different direction. It goes in a cool direction. Yes. It is almost like a House of Leaves thing going on with the weird man, like puzzle mansion and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Although my favorite part, and I'm not going to give any spoilers to this, is the octopus.
Oh, yeah. That is a really weird sequence.
Yeah.
The second season is much more surreal and supernatural than the first season.
By far.
It's almost like a completely different show.
Uh-huh. I was actually wondering if I was watching the wrong thing, because when you watch that first episode, it doesn't say the OA,
mm-hmm.
and it's dealing with this detective looking for a lost girl.
Mm-hmm.
And after like a few, you know, after like 15, 20 minutes, I'm going, am I watching the OA? Did I click on the wrong thing? And then finally, right after that, I think I stopped it and I went to bed. And then, like, the next day I started up, I'm like, all right, what am I watching if this is not the OA? And I'm trying to figure it out. And it's like, oh, there it is. Now we got the girl. Like, as soon as I started it again, here she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does a good job of I wish it had done more of that. I wish it had kind of just stayed with the detective and had been more focused on his story. Because part of me almost kind of likes the idea that the second season is almost its own self-contained story.
Right, right. That's what I thought they were going with.
Yeah, and that would have been cool. Like, I would have been completely down with that. You know, part of me does like, you know, when things are revealed and it's like, oh, this is what really happened and everything. But I guess it kind of spoils the mystery a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why sometimes it gets on my nerves. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is my big argument with people who hated Lost and say, well, I hated it because, you know, people will say they hated it because it didn't explain everything. I'm like, but that's why I loved it. You know, they left you with all these unanswered questions at the end.
Yeah, there's a good way. There's like a good way to do that and a bad way to do that. Like if you're intentionally vague and there are no answers, like this is what drives me up the wall about the final season of Twin Peaks: The Return, is that it does very much that it doesn't explain really anything. There's a few things that are explained.
It's just weird for the sake of being weird.
Yeah, that's David Lynch anyway.
Yeah. Well, see, this is what's infuriating, because I don't think it's weird just for the sake of being weird. I do think that there are like secrets and there are things hidden in it but the problem is that nobody knows what it means except for David Lynch.
Yeah.
Is it based off of, because Serfiel started watching it, mm-hmm. and he was telling me some things about it, because you piqued his interest after you came on the show and talked a little bit about the lumberjacks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And is it based on a lot of like Kenneth Grant stuff?
Absolutely. The whole Twin Peaks series is. It was much less on the nose than in The Return. In The Return, it's like explicit. But it literally is the Typhonian trilogy, is like the TV series.
Huh.
Like it's,
I guess I never thought about it like that.
Everything in it. I mean, it's obvious that Mark Frost, it's all the Mark Frost stuff. Okay, like David Lynch, I don't think knows anything about Kenneth Grant, probably doesn't care. But all of this supernatural stuff mostly comes from Mark Frost, and it is all like Kenneth Grant stuff. I mean, there's even like a Mauve Zone. Like in The Return, they're like sort of I don't even know what it is. I don't know if it's supposed to be the Black Lodge or whatever, but it's like the weird sort of castle that's on the ocean. The ocean is Mauve. It's literally the Mauve Zone. And like, I think I'm trying to remember if it's in Hecate's Fountain or Outside the Circles of Time. There's a part where he talks about like how like UFOs were sort of released because of the nuclear tests, and like, or the nuclear tests kind of opened the sphere of Da'oth and like allowed these trans-Saturnian entities like through. And that's literally what happens in The Return. Like the Trinity test is what like opens up the world to, you know, the Black Lodge, and all the Black Lodge, White Lodge stuff is, you know, from Grant.
Right. Right.
Like, it's definitely, Mark Frost is definitely a Kenneth Grant nerd, because I've even been reading some Kenneth Grant like recently, and like I see stuff in there that's like, oh yeah, this is like cribbed right from this book and put into Twin Peaks.
As far as Channel Zero goes, there were four of them. Candle Cove, which was excellent and had the Tooth Monster. The No End House, which was also really good, about a house you go in and I think, if I remember right, it makes you face your deepest fears, and it feeds off of you. Butcher's Block, which brings up the staircases in the woods and the cannibals. And the Dream Door, which is sort of a Topa-like thing going on, where this girl accidentally creates her imaginary friend and he goes and kills people for her without her knowledge.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I'm kind of amazed that there isn't like an SCP Foundation TV show.
What's that?
It's like SCP Foundation. It's like a wiki, but it's basically just like Slenderman type stuff. Like people basically create these like creatures that are like, how do I explain this? The wiki is like written in like an in-universe style, as if there is the secret government like organization called the SCP Foundation that basically catalogs and captures and contains like these sort of crazy creepypasta monsters like Slenderman. And each entry in the SCP wiki is like, you know, one of these creatures and like what it can do and like everything. So it's like endless material. I honestly am surprised that no one's done like a TV show on it, because the Channel Zero stuff is all based on, you know, different kind of internet.
It's all creepypasta stuff.
Yeah. And for people who aren't familiar with creepypasta, it's basically like internet urban folklore.
Yeah.
Basically. It's like scary stories that people make up and post on sites like 4chan.
Where Slenderman comes from.
Yeah, Slenderman was originally one of these, and it doesn't have anything to do with actual pasta. It is basically when people would like write a story on 4chan and they would copy it and paste it in a bunch of other places, they would call it copypasta. And so creepypasta is basically copypasta, but just like, you know, creepy stories. The one I always remember that was like on 4chan when I was still posting there a long time ago in another life was the one about like the cursed Pokemon cartridge.
Oh, I vaguely remember hearing about that.
Where it was like it had like the dead like ghost Pokemon in it and stuff. It was like super creepy. Like it's one of the really famous ones, and that's the one that I remember. But it's turned into like a whole subculture into itself nowadays.
All right, there's a couple more others I want to mention real quick. This one, Pie Wacket. More fun than anything else. It's a horror movie about a girl who. Her mother moves her out to the country. She goes out, and she's angry about this because she didn't want to leave her friends and stuff. And she goes out into the woods, and she does these rituals. And they work. And then she tries to undo what she did.
Pie Wacket. Yeah, I haven't seen that.
P-Y-E Wacket. W-A-E-K-E-T. You know, like it's not amazing. It's not going to blow you away, but it was a fun watch and had a lot of, you know, occult elements thrown into it. Aaron and the black metal band Carrick Angren in one scene, she's listening to, and I'm just like, wait, I know this. And it's only there for, you know, a short bit, and I had to Shazam it, and I'm like, Carrick Angren, all right. The other one that I did really, really like was At First Light. Either of you seen this?
I haven't seen that either.
So it's a sci-fi movie about this girl who basically she dies and she's brought back to life by these alien intelligences who are basically lights. And she ends up with like massive electrical interference and stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at this because, yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
It's more of a subtle sort of movie, you know, like it's not an action, you know, pack type of thing, but it's like, she just starts, here's the description. Alex is floating unconscious in a lake when a light from a UFO of light saves her by enhancing her abilities such as telekinesis and healing power. Her friend Sean helps her. The authorities want her not just for stealing a police car.
Interesting.
I really, really liked that one. Well, he has a 5.5 on IMDb, but
who reads reviews?
I enjoyed all the nods to the stuff that we look into. You know what I mean? Like it has the near death experience. It has UFOs as light. It has the electromagnetic effects, the psi effects, and all this other stuff. It was just like. Really interesting what they did with it.
Cool. I'll definitely check that one out because it looks neat. I'm looking at a review on Variety right now of it. Have either of you watched any Doom Patrol yet?
No, but I've been told it's really good.
Yeah, it's incredible. Everyone, I don't know what to tell people because it is really not the easiest thing to watch because it's only available on DC Universe's like streaming platform, which, you know, I'm not going to pay $10 a month to
watch one show.
To watch just DC stuff. But you can get a free 1 week trial. So maybe just wait until all the episodes are out and then you could binge it in 7 days. Yeah. But it is by far the best like superhero TV show thing that has been done like. Probably, I would say ever. I mean, I'm sure other people like stuff, but it's really, really good. Brendan Fraser is great in it. It's got Timothy Dalton, so people who enjoyed you know, old James Bond movies would get a kick out of it. And it covers basically every weird thing that you'd hear about on your favorite paranormal podcast.
Really?
Yeah. There's even like kind of Bigfoot type stuff in it. There's like Tulpa stuff. I mean, it's all based on the Grant Morrison run of Doom Patrol. So it's got all of these weird sort of occult things that come into it. It's less so much like very specific occult things and more just a general sense of like weirdness and chaos that happens in it. There's lots of like fourth wall breaking from the main villain. I knew that I would love the show in the second episode when Timothy Dalton's like asking him a question, like asking the villain a question. The villain ignores him and he's asking something about like, why are people still here? And he's like, I don't know. They must be Grant Morrison fans. And like, it's kind of corny, but like, I enjoyed that little fourth wall break. And it's such a fun show. Like, it has a sense of humor and it just rolls with the weirdness. It includes like characters such as Danny the Street. Are either of you familiar with Danny the Street?
No.
So Danny the Street is my favorite comic book character of all time. She is featured in the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol run. But basically, Danny is a transgendered street that can teleport itself anywhere in the world and integrate itself into, like, any street. And it's, like, sentient. Like, it talks to people with, like, signs on the street or, like, you know, skywriting in the air or whatever. Like, it talks to people using the elements of the street itself. And it's just like an incredible concept for a character. And it's so much fun, like the way they, because it's funny because you'll look up articles, would it be like the top 10 comic book characters that can never be put on film or like would never translate to the screen. And Danny's inevitably on one of those. And they actually like do it perfectly. Like the Danny the Street episode of Doom Patrol is like incredible. And in the last couple episodes, they've been hinting that Flex Mentallo is going to be part of it. And if people aren't familiar with Flex Mentallo, he's the man of muscle mystery. He's another character from Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol run. And he had his own comic, I think, that he did with Frank Quietly. But he's basically a kid that, you know, like in old comic books, there would be like a little thing where the scrawny guy's like walking along the beach with his girlfriend and he gets sand kicked in his face. Mm-hmm. And then it tells you, you know, to send like
Charles Atlas.
Yeah, the Charles Atlas stuff. So it's like it like Flex Mentallo was like a scrawny kid who actually like sent in and got the Charles Atlas thing and did it. And he became the man of muscle mystery. And he's basically a superhero who can change reality by flexing his muscles. And whenever he uses his like powers, like over his head, a huge halo appears that says Hero of the Beach. He's just, I mean, like, it's an incredible comic series and it's an incredible show. Like, it's so much fun. But yeah, I mean, if you wait until I think it's the first season is almost over. So
yeah, there's only one episode left.
Yeah. So if you just wait until all the episodes are out, you could just do the free trial and then read it there. And while you have the free trial, you can also read, like, it includes like a comic book reader for a lot of DC comics. So you can actually go and read Grant Morrison's run on Doom Patrol if you've never read that and you want to experience that.
Okay.
But yeah, if you're a Grant Morrison fan, definitely, you know, get the free trial from DC Universe and watch Doom Patrol. You'll have a good time.
On the not paranormal front, I thoroughly enjoyed Deadly Class on Sci-Fi.
What is that? Because I don't think I've watched anything on Sci-Fi in a while.
It's about the. I don't know if it's actually pulled from a graphic novel or not, but it seems like it is. And it's about these kids in the 80s who are all troubled in some way or part of crime families or whatever. It's basically a school for assassins.
Oh, okay.
But it's, you know, and I heard that at first and I said, I don't think I care. And then I saw some previews and I went, all right, that looks like it might be interesting. And it has a good feel to it and it's really well done. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That sounds fun. I mean, there's been a lot, I feel like there's been a lot of the sort of teen, not superheroes, but you know what I mean? Like kind of like shows like that, like Umbrella. What is it? Umbrella Society?
Umbrella Corporation, I think, wasn't it?
That's from Resident Evil.
That's Resident Evil, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Umbrella Academy. Yeah, Umbrella Academy. Which I kind of enjoyed at first, but I ended up stopping after a while because I couldn't deal with it anymore. It was like too dumb for its own good. It's a show that's like the whole first like part of Umbrella Academy is really carried by the one young guy, I think number 5, the kid who can time travel. Like, he's such a good actor and he's like really funny and he carries most of it, but like it just eventually, you know, one actor can't carry the whole show. And
yeah,
when I watched Doom Patrol, I was like, oh, this is like Umbrella Academy, but good. And then you find out that Gerard Way, who did Umbrella Academy, was really influenced by Grant Morrison's run on Doom Patrol and is actually writing the current run of Doom Patrol from DC Comics. So you're like, oh, he just wanted to write Doom Patrol the whole time. That's why he did Umbrella Academy, because he didn't have the rights for Doom Patrol. But now that he has the rights to Doom Patrol, he probably doesn't care anymore. He's like, okay, whatever. Who cares about Umbrella Academy?
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop.
All right.
And Adam's probably going to doze off anyway.
I haven't started snoring yet. My name's not Joshua Cutchin, so I'm not going to fall asleep on you.
Hey, Red Pill fell asleep too.
Did he?
Yep. But we could actually hear Josh snoring. That was the difference.
That was one of my favorite shows ever. I just want to let you know that I laughed so hard on that.
There's one with Red Pill where we hear like a thud, and then a few minutes later I realize, you know, he hasn't said anything in a while, and I'm like, Red Pill and Miguel and nothing, and then like 10 minutes later he just chimes in and we're like, oh, you are with us. He's like, yeah, I woke back up.
Nice.
But yeah, Josh just was so tired one night and that was it.
And that is the best of us.
That it does. Yes. All right. So, Adam, people can find you at
conspiranormal.com and conspiranormal.podomatic.com.
And Ran?
You can find me at liminalroom.com.
All right. Thank you both.
Thanks, everyone.
And I want to thank everyone who has become a Patreon and helped support this show. It means the world to me. And I particularly want to give a shout out to those pledging $10 or more: UFO Weekly News, Maria, John Rutledge Foster III, Kevin, Roger Gonzalez, William Lovelace, 36 Dingo, Jennifer Campbell, Nate Syria, Mark Brady, Paul Buscini, Sasha Lorg, Christopher Vaughn, Lindsay Jackson K, Chris Iza Hot Dog S. Sandwich, Jose A., Janet Runyon, Sean Cosgrove, Ben Crow, American Rambler, Andy McNamara, Patricia Guayaquinta, Eric Citron, Matthias Sunby, John Eddy, Riker and Stark, and Mike McGuire. Thank you all very, very much.
Come in. Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Singing, soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Whence came this dream that fogs my mind? Behind a curtain, outside of time. Can you hear the knowledge plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear the knowledge? getting to be wary. You are getting to the heart of the universe. Ventricles and Tetrahead, chambers number 1597. And counting. And counting. Can you hear the ballet face? The whirring of the world. Can you hear the ballet face? The whirring of the world. Can you hear? Can you hear the ballet plays? The whirring of the world. Can you hear the ballet plays? The whirring of the world.
The whirring of the world.
You have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And thank you so much for your support.